My girl is a horse.
In this wild and woolly universe of ours, there's only three things you can count on. Your brains, your bros, and your bike. Helmets on! It's time to rock and ride!
That, ladies and gentlemen, was especially for Chris. After last week's episode of playing Denver the Last Dinosaur, Chris informed me that his favourite was always Biker Mice from Mars, so I thought I would play it for him. So there you go, Chris. Hope you enjoyed that. As you've probably gathered by now, you are listening to That's a Freebie. This is episode number 49. This week, I've got a story about reaching a huge parenting milestone. I'm going to say buzz off to something that isn't really that bad, but, you know, really annoys me for a very specific reason, as is most buzz offs. In our podtail section, we're going to look at the Winchester Mystery House. This is a good one. You're going to love it. And of course, I'm going to have a pick of the week, and we're going to have another question for the finale, another school related one. All that and more coming in the show. But first, I'm going to ask a freebie question, because that's how we start the show every week, right? So this week's question is from Seb. And Seb writes, I'm really liking Podtails. Mansa Musa was interesting. It got me thinking about what it would be like to bring him into today's society. And then I started thinking about immortality and thought about becoming immortal. And it became a thing that occupied my mind for a day. Okay, wow. So my question is, if you could become immortal, would you? Oh, Really enjoying the show. You seem to have found your show format now, Seb. Thank you very much, Seb. Wow. So would I become immortal? I think yes is probably the answer there. I would absolutely choose to do that. I suppose it depends on the circumstances. You know, if it's you become immortal, but you have to be a vampire, I probably wouldn't want to do that because I wouldn't want to be the person out there killing people, drinking the blood, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, pretty sure all vampires do, right? But if I could become immortal as I am now, well, maybe not as I am now. That's a good point. What happens when you become immortal? Do you become immortal at your peak? Do you become immortal as exactly as you are now? Because, you know, if I got pre-warning, what I'd like to do is really, like, just spend some time getting into shape and then become immortal. What I'd hate to be is immortal like I am now, because I'd never be able to get anywhere. I'd be forever running out of breath. Write in, let me know what you think. If you want to open the show with an Ask a Freebie question, you can do so. You just go to thatsafreebie.com. At the top of the page, there's an Ask a Freebie link, and it takes you to the form. Your question can be about anything you like. You can also give feedback on the show that way as well. And all you need to do is just write in there if you don't want it to be read out on the air. That's absolutely fine as well. But for now, let's play the theme tune.
Sit back, relax, unless you're driving. It's time for That's a Freebie.
As I said, I reached a huge parenting milestone this week. I was able to teach my daughter how to ride a bike. It was amazing. She's 10 years old. She's attempted it several times in the past, and it's just never happened. She's just, I suppose, never been in the mindset to be able to do it. And she actually asked. So this was last Friday, and she said, Dad, can we go and try and ride my bike today? So I was like, absolutely. Put the bike in the car, heads off to the park. She wanted to try on grass at first. I tried explaining to her that it's actually easier to pedal when you're on solid ground, but she just wasn't for having it. She was too scared of falling off. She had all the skateboarding padding on, and she had a helmet on, and she was actually not too bad at it. I thought she was going to be very, very nervous, but she really just threw herself into it. It was great. It took about 20 minutes before she was riding on her own. And I think actually if I'd have just adopted a different style, it would have been even quicker. At first I was trying to get her to set off on her own and pedal through, essentially, because she kept stopping pedaling, and she just wasn't quite getting it. So then I tried the holding the back of the seat and doing it that way, but she was a bit too wobbly, so we stopped to have a break. That was only after about 10 minutes. It felt like 4 hours, but it was only after 10 minutes. While we were having the break, I had a quick search on YouTube for tips on helping your child learn to ride a bike. And almost all of the tips on there were to put your hands either on the shoulders or just under their armpits, because you could steer from the back. It worked absolutely perfectly. So we're going around, and she, I let go at one point. Well, I'll say I let go. She just rode off. She got too fast for me at one point. And she turns around, she comes back, and she stops. The only thing she hasn't quite got the hang of yet is stopping. But, you know, that, as is anything, takes time. She stopped by running into me. I was expecting it, though. I was able to stop her before she hurt me. And then she said, the only thing I'm scared of, Dad, is I'm a bit too scared to turn. So I said, well, if you look up, you're actually facing the opposite direction to what you set off. So you've already turned. And she was like, oh, I didn't realize. She'd gone full circle. So yeah, that was quite good. It was something I've been wanting to do for a while. We just have to get the boy to do it now. He's a bit more into wanting to do it. It's sadly, when we came to get the bikes out of the garage, both of his tires were flat. We don't have a pump. If we did, we couldn't find it. So that's probably going to be the one for the summer holidays. It's more practice for the girl and get the boy started as well. I think he'll do absolutely fine, to be honest. He's usually quite good at picking things up almost right away. They both are, actually. It's just the girl has to be in the mood, essentially, to do it. She has to want to do it. If she doesn't want to do it, she ain't going to do it. Which I suppose is the same for most people. I also finally got to go and see my sisters. I don't really see my sisters as often as I would like to. A couple of reasons. One of them is time. I'm quite a busy person, unfortunately, so it does mean that finding time to go visit people just doesn't happen very often. I wish it did happen more often, but it just doesn't, sadly. Maybe that's a me problem. Maybe I do actually need to try and make more time for something like that. I think that is exactly what it is. I need to find the time better. And the other reason is distance. We don't live terribly far away, but it's about a 30-minute drive. And again, that ties in with the time thing. And also time where we're all off together. It's very rare that me, the children, and my wife are all not either in school or working at the same time, only during holidays. And obviously during holidays, we want to try and do something together because we don't get to very often. So yeah, that's why it goes that way. Funny thing did happen though, whilst at my sister's, I say funny thing, it was funny for everybody except my daughter, I suppose. I've mentioned before on the show that she is terrified of dogs. And she really is. It's a proper fear. She locks up when she sees them. Even just walking down the street, she just absolutely freezes. And my family on that side, so my sister's side of the family, I have two sisters. I am saying sisters with an S in the end. It's hard to tell, I realize. They have always had dogs because we always had dogs growing up. And between them now, there's three dogs in the house. And well, there's three dogs in the house on this day because one sister was visiting the other sister because we were visiting, and my stepdad was there as well. So it means that all the dogs are there, right? So three of them, two little white dogs and one little black pug. I think it's a pug. Sorry if it's not a pug, but I think it's a pug. And they come running into the house after we've been there for roughly about half an hour or so, I think. They came running in. They were in a different room. They came running in, and she froze up, and one of them ran at her, and it, tiniest thing in the world, it sat on her knee, and she froze, and she's going, ah! So we took the dog off her knee, and they said, oh, well, we'll put the dogs in the kitchen. They'll be fine. So they went to put one in the kitchen. Then she saw the other white one, and she hadn't realized there was more than one. She saw the other white one, and she's like, ah, there's another. And then my sister picked up the pug. Now, this pug only has one eye. And she picked it up, and she held it up, and she went, look, this one's only got one eye. And he's wiggling about in front of her, and she went, ah! And she ran away screaming because a one-eyed dog absolutely freaked her out. She sees the funny side of it now, but at the time, absolutely did not see the funny side of it. Speaking of embarrassing stories, we first day at school on Monday, we're walking to school and the boy fell down a hole. They'd cut the grass where we usually walk across a field to get there. And there's a hole in the area that we're walking over. And what they've done when they cut the grass, they've either on purpose filled it with cut grass, or it's just all fallen in there. Hard to tell, but you couldn't tell there was a hole. It wasn't a big hole. It sort of went roughly to his knees, and yeah, he fell down it. So he ended up in school with muddy pants on his first day before it even started. I am telling fancy toilets to buzz off. Actually, more accurately, fancy toilet signs, right? So, you know, when you go into a pub or a restaurant or anything of the kind, and you've got the toilets in there, right? I understand the need for more diverse toilet signs. That's okay. I'm fine with the signs on the toilets being diverse. What I'm not fine with is when you go to a beef eater, which is what happened this week, and the signs in the toilet are in a different language. I have no problems with different languages. However, I've got two children that are learning to read. So they go, oh, I just need the toilet, Dad. Like, okay, you know where it is, don't you? They go, yep. They go down to the area where the toilets are, and there's four doors, and every one of them has got a word on it that's not in English or not readable to them in some way, shape, or form, or not just not understandable to them. I can't even remember what the example was for this one. It said something on, like, I think it said wonderfully fabulous dudes for the men, And I can't remember what it said for the ladies. I remember the men being the problem because my boy went to go to the toilet. He gets to the bathroom and he couldn't tell which one he was supposed to be going into. So he ended up almost peeing himself because he was having a bit of a panic attack. So he stood there waiting for somebody to either go in or come out so we could tell which one to go into. In the end, we realized he'd been gone quite a while. So I went walking to the bathrooms and I saw him stood there like crossing his legs, like almost crying because he needed to pee so badly, not able to work out which toilet he was supposed to be going into. And that's when I thought to myself, yeah, actually it's cute and everything that we have all these like fancy names for the toilets, but actually it's not helpful for when you've got people that either don't speak the language or people that are trying to learn the language, or, you know, children. It doesn't work. It's quite difficult. So yeah, fancy toilet signs this week get to buzz off. I would like now to talk to you about the Winchester Mystery House. Now, if you haven't heard about this, I'm going to tell you all about it now. It's an absolutely mind-boggling thing. You're going to love this one. I was actually thinking of saving this for closer towards Halloween, but I don't think really it fits into a Halloween-y theme. You might think, because loads of horror movies are, I don't know if horror movies is the right word, scary-ish movies have been made that feature this house, but I don't really think the actual reality of it fits into what it's been made to see in the media. So I thought I would just talk about it in a regular episode. I have got something planned for Halloween that should be pretty cool. We'll see. So let's make a start. The Winchester Mystery House in San Jose, California is not just any mansion. It's a labyrinth of architectural wonders and mysterious lore built by Sarah Winchester, widow of the firearms magnate William Wirt Winchester. The Victorian and Gothic style mansion stands out not only for its size, but also for the curious myths surrounding it. Sarah, or Sally as she was known, was born in New Haven, Connecticut in 1839. She married William Wirt Winchester in 1862. And in 1866, she gave birth to a daughter, Annie Pardy Winchester, who tragically passed away after just 1 month. In a span of just a few years, Sarah faced immense loss, with her mother, father-in-law, and husband all passing away, leaving her with a substantial inheritance. And then in 1885, seeking relief from her developing rheumatoid arthritis, Sarah moved to California. In San Jose, she purchased a 45-acre ranch and 8-room farmhouse, which she named Landa Villa. That's spelled L-L-A-N-A-D-A. So actually, that would be Lanada Villa, wouldn't it? Over the years, the modest farmhouse would transform into a sprawling and enigmatic Winchester Mystery House. Sarah Winchester was deeply involved in the design and construction of her home. After dismissing several architects, she took the reins herself, which never goes right. If we've learned anything from grand designs, it's if you try and do it yourself, it's probably not going to go right. She planned each room meticulously, drawing inspiration from the world's fairs of the time. Her unconventional methods and frequent changes led to a maze-like structure of walled-off windows and doors, staircases leading to nowhere, and multiple levels that created a Victorian Gothic masterpiece. The house features a myriad of unique details. Carved wood paneling, intricate ballroom floors, and windows with Shakespearean quotes. There were chandeliers from Germany, art glass from Austria, and furnishings from across the globe. Due to her height, she of just 4 feet 10 inches, and her health issues, Sarah even had a special stairway built with 44 steps, but it raised only 10 feet. There are pictures of this online. You should totally go and have a look at it. It is interesting to see. Contrary to popular myths, the construction of the house was not continuous for 38 years until her death in 1922. Sarah often took breaks for months at a time, which contradicts the tales of relentless building to ward off spirits. You start to see now why it's been used in horror movies. By the time of her death, the house boasted 160 rooms, 2,000 doors, 10,000 windows, 47 stairways, 47 fireplaces, 13 bathrooms and 6 kitchens. Not enough kitchens, if you ask me. I don't know what's going on there. Sarah Winchester was ahead of her time in many ways. The house included features like indoor plumbing and push-button gas lights, which were cutting-edge for the time. It also had 3 elevators and an early version of a central heating system. While the fascination with the number 13 is often exaggerated, there are indeed numerous instances of 13 in the house's design. For example, some windows contain 13 panes and there are 13 bathrooms, although not all of these details are necessarily part of Sarah's original design and may have been added later. So a coincidence then. The house features numerous trapdoors, secret passages and a door to nowhere, which opens into thin air. These quirks contribute to the house's mysterious reputation and provide a sense of adventure for visitors exploring the mansion. While it's a myth that Sarah consulted with spirits to guide her construction, spiritualism was a significant cultural phenomenon during her time. It is plausible she may have been influenced by the general spiritualist movement, which was quite popular among women of her social standing in the late 19th century. The house contains what is claimed to be the world's longest hallway, known as the Hall of Fires, which stretches over 100 feet and was named, you probably guessed it, for its numerous fireplaces. The house features beautiful and intricate stained glass windows, many designed by the renowned artist John Malone. Some of these windows have spiderweb designs and other unique motifs that add to the house's eerie aesthetic. Beyond the mansion itself, the Winchester Mystery House originally included expansive and elaborately designed gardens, complete with intricate paintings, fountains, and statues. These gardens were an essential part of Sarah's vision for her estate. After Sarah's death, the house quickly became a tourist attraction. Despite being in disrepair, it was purchased and turned into a public attraction, with many of the myths and legends we hear today being propagated by tour guides and promotional materials. Over the years, rumours and stories have embellished Sarah Winchester's story. Some claim she built the house to appease spirits of those killed by Winchester rifles, while others suggest she believed she would die if construction ever stopped. However, as you've probably gathered from the previous statements, research and historical evidence suggests that Sarah was a sensible woman who enjoyed architecture and design, rather than being driven by guilt or superstition. The 1906 San Francisco earthquake caused significant damage to the house, leading to even more bizarre features like doors and stairs leading nowhere. Despite the damage, Sarah did not undertake extensive repairs, leaving many parts of the house in disarray. Sarah Winchester was also known for her charitable work and was considered savvy in business and finance. Contrary to the image of a reclusive, guilt-ridden widow, she was involved in various charitable organizations and even provided homes for her family and friends. The Winchester Mystery House has inspired numerous books, documentaries, and films. One notable example is the 2018 horror film Winchester, starring Helen Mirren, which dramatizes the legends surrounding Sarah Winchester and her mansion. Today, the Winchester Mystery House stands as a testament to Sarah Winchester's unique vision and the fascinating, albeit often misunderstood, story of her life. It continues to intrigue and attract visitors from around the world, each drawn by the allure of its mystery and the enduring legend of its creator. But that's not all. The Winchester House has been the inspiration or central focus in pop culture over the years. Here's just a few of them. In 1960, the Winchester Mystery House was used as the Cyrus Zorba House in the movie 13 Ghosts, directed by William Castle. In 1966, the house was featured on the album cover of the California rock group Count Five. The tale of the Winchester Mystery House was the inspiration for the Haunted Mansion Disney ride, the first of which opened in 1969 in California. The Haunting of Winchester is a ghost story musical by composer Craig Boimler and writer Mary Bracken Phillips that takes place in the house. Okay, a musical in a haunted house. I kind of want to see that. It was commissioned by the San Jose Repertory Theater for its 25th anniversary season and premiered in September to October 2005. The British paranormal TV investigation show Most Haunted Live conducted a 7-hour live TV investigation of the house for the Travel Channel on Monday, October 19th, 2007. For the 2012 episode of Mythbusters Smell of Fear, the build team visited the Winchester Mystery House to look around and later watch one of the scariest movies of all time on a television that they set up in the Grand Ballroom. The purpose determining if fear does smell different by gathering their sweat samples for testing at the end of the night. While the team watched the movie in the dark, the show's crew randomly made loud noises to increase the frightening experience. Yeah, that is exactly what you would do, isn't it? In 2017, filming took place on the property for the film Winchester, featuring Helen Mirren as Sarah Winchester. The film was released on February 23rd, 2018. In trailers and posters, the film is noted to be based on a true story, despite evidence that much of the stories in the movie are disputed in Mary Jo Ingoff's book, Captive of the Labyrinth. Yeah, I think we've already determined that most of the stories were actually just completely made up. In 2018, the Law podcast, episode 79, produced a book called, not a book, an episode called Locked Away that described the Winchester Mansion. And in 2019, Criminal podcast produced an episode about the Winchester Mansion titled Widow and the Winchester. House of Penance, a Dark Horse comic by Peter Tomasi and Ian Bertram and Dave Stewart, is perhaps the first biographical graphic horror novel that illustrates the house as haunted and Sarah as obsessed. Mrs. Winchester's Gun Club, a novel by Douglas Bruton in 2019, which is an adult fiction concerning Sarah Winchester. Probably guess that, and telling a group of stories voiced by the victims of Winchester guns. Wow. And finally, in January 2021, an episode of the award-winning podcast This Paranormal Life was released discussing the Winchester Mystery House. The host deemed all claims of haunting to be false. Yeah, I think I would probably agree with that. It's an absolutely fascinating story. There's even more in the Wikipedia article, so do feel free to head over and have a read of it. I'll leave a link to that in the show notes. There's pictures on there as well of the inside of the house. They even have a website where you can go and have a look at the tour information. It's an absolutely crazy, crazy thing. I love it. If you love That's a Freebie and want even more, you can now subscribe to That's a Freebie Plus. Just head on over to thatsafreebie.com and click the Get Plus Here link at the top of the page where you can join to get access to the unpolished feed. That is the raw, unedited recording of the show sent out immediately after it's recorded. So you can hear all the times I mess up, but most of all, you can hear it before anybody else and you get to see how I make the show as well. You also get access to any specials that I make early. And I'll be adding more of those as That's a Freebie Plus grows. You also get access to the Discord, so you can talk with me directly. Members get access to all of that, plus the uncut feed, which features stories that I just can't make it into the main feed, usually because they're not family friendly or the stuff I don't want out there in the public, I suppose. That doesn't really happen, but yeah, it's usually they're not family friendly in some way, shape or form, and I don't want to put them on the main podcast feed. And if you don't want to join Plus, that is okay. You can still help the show by sharing it far and wide and leaving a review in your favorite podcast client of choice, or heading over to YouTube and liking the episode on YouTube and comment on there as well. I will see those comments. For this week's pick of the week, I have a application. Not unsurprising, most of my picks of the week tend to be applications or somewhat similar. This one, though, is quite a useful one. It's called Citizen Aid, and it is essentially a directory of what you do in emergency situations, and it's really, really useful. I would encourage you to download it and have a look. I read about it on, I think, Reddit. Someone just mentioned it. One of those things, it was a thread on things that most people don't know exist, but should know exists. And yeah, it's pretty good. If you find yourself in a situation where you don't know what to do to help somebody else, or even yourself, I suppose, this app will probably have an answer for it in there. It tells you the correct process to take, all that kind of stuff. Like, even things like, you know, if you find a bag unattended in public, like, there are posters everywhere telling us what to do with that kind of stuff. But sometimes you do look around and you're like, should I? Shouldn't I? What do I do? Pop this app open, choose unattended bag in public. And it says, first of all, find somebody who works at the place you're at. Inform them. If you can't find somebody at the place you're at, actually, no, it doesn't say that. That's the second option. The first option is to ask loudly, does this bag belong to anybody? No answer there. Then you find somebody that works there. If you don't get any result there, it says call the police. So there are absolutely the correct things to be doing in a lot of situations. And the Citizen Aid app is really, really useful. There's a US version and a UK version, as far as I know. But what they suggest is if you're anywhere except the US, use the UK version. Don't know why that is, but that's what they suggested on the website when I had a look. If you recall, last week I asked the question, were you a cool kid in high school? And if not, what clique would you have said you were in? And yes, I got a lot of stick last week for saying clique instead of clique. That's just how I said it, right? Sometimes you say stuff incorrectly, just like I did then. So what clique were you in? I would have said, like, looking back on it now, like, at the time, I would probably have said I was absolutely one of the cool kids. I was not one of the cool kids. I was more of a, I would probably have been put into the category of band geek. I didn't play an instrument. Well, I did. I played the guitar, but I never played it in school. I did all my learning outside of school. Mentioned it before. My best friend at school played the drums in the band. And in fact, most of my friends were in the band now that I think about it. So what I used to do is I used to essentially hang around with the band kids. I was in band practice. I used to help out setting stands up and things like that. I'd set the drum kit up, take the drum kit down, all that kind of stuff. I was always able to resist the temptation to have a go on the drum kit. And I was always impressed with myself at doing that because I knew it'd be embarrassing if I tried because I would make an absolute fool of myself. So yeah, I would say I was a band geek. This week's question is going to be still related to school. I'm trying to follow a pattern with these things. I might move on next week to some other sort of topic. But this week's question is, how did you manage your lessons schedule when you were in high school? Like, how did you know where to be? I have thoughts on this. If you want to get in touch with me, I am That's a Freebie or That's a Freebie Podcast on almost all social media. I think, if memory serves me right, I am That's a Freebie Podcast on everything except for X, because you can't have enough characters to do That's a Freebie Podcast in the in your username. So I'm pretty sure that's the one that I'm That's a Freebie on. That's how you get in touch with the show, other than using the form on the website. I am Hey It's Diggy on almost all social media, and I will see you next week.